WPR Radio, its staff, management, or sponsor.
No, not at all. We're going to our cool inventor today. I was only having fun. Wasn't hurt.
Then there's zippers up the side so that the jacket will fit tightly around the hips, keeping that straight, sleek look that it should have. And very often you'll find a zipper hidden in the arm.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You'll excuse the fact that I'm out of breath, but about 10 or 15 minutes ago, a tragic thing, from all indications at this point, has happened in the city of Dallas. Let me quote to you this. And you'll excuse me if I am out of breath. A bulletin, this is from the United Press, from Dallas. President Kennedy and Governor John Connally have been cut down by assassin's bullets in downtown Dallas. They were riding in an open automobile when the shots were fired. The president, his limp body carried in the arms of his wife, Jacqueline, has rushed to Parkland Hospital. And if you'll excuse me if I give some directions and we talk about what we're going to do here for the next few minutes, but Bobby, let's tape this, if you please, particularly the interview with the eyewitness people. It is being taped. Good. Here's a piece of copy that was rushed to me and was torn off from the United Press in Dallas. President Kennedy has been shot in Dallas, Texas. He was shot as a motorcade left downtown Dallas. Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed the president. She cried, oh no, as the motorcade sped on. An Associated Press photographer, James Algens, A-L-T-G-E-N-S, reports he saw blood on the president's head. The AP man said he heard two shots but thought someone was shooting fireworks until he saw the blood on the president. He also said he saw no one. That it's all because of you, and you wouldn't want me any other way. You made the right.
Good morning. It's time for the Morning Edge here on WWPR, 1490 AM, heard Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 AM to 10 AM. I'm Henry Raines. Here's Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay, and good morning, Henry. Do you remember where you were on that particular devastating day when I came out of a funeral, actually, that had just occurred.
I was homesick from first grade.
Were you?
Yep. You got to see the whole thing on TV.
You got to watch it all. I was in my car, and I was listening to the radio broadcasts and say that, well, the governor was shot, and the president. I said, what corporation are we talking about here? And I'm listening longer, and of course,
United States Incorporated.
Yeah. Maybe this goes back to the warning that Eisenhower gave us. So it's, yeah. But we're going to be talking about a little bit of that today, aren't we, Henry?
Yes. We have Judith Vary Baker. Miss Baker is actually going to be a hometown girl here today. She was a graduate of Manatee High School. And also Lee Harvey Oswald's lover, as well as recruited by the CIA right out of more or less Manatee High School because of the after-school research she was doing on implanting cancer in mice and getting them to, what do you call cancer when it sprouts?
Metastasizing.
Grow the tumors anyway.
Grow the tumors.
I don't know. Once you grow them fast enough, they'll metastasize around the body, I guess.
Metastasis indicates growth is rapid and beyond control. So that,
And she was a whiz-bang at that, using the vernacular maybe at the time, and recruited by the CIA.
Well, you're taking it a little ahead. I mean, Lee Harvey Oswald did not come into her life in a personal way until after she was married, so supposedly.
Yeah, that is something you can choose to point out to her.
Well, her husband was a longshoreman or something like that. He worked on boats and so forth and was not at home enough to care for his husbandry behavior.
Well, actually, some people were saying being out working and guiding your livelihood was taking care of the family. But, you know, we won't split hairs on this.
Yeah.
And she also was recruited in the attempt to give Fidel Castro cancer, and
which is what that Mary Sherman's effort was in injecting the polio virus, other things with the cancer, and trying it out on monkeys and so forth, all kinds of experiments. And a guy by the name of Dr. Osher, who had befriended Richard Nixon, had gotten all kinds of grants and so forth in order to discover what could be done, and then the motive, of course, was to develop something that would be affect Mr. Dr. Castro in Cuba and kill him off, and of course the end of the communist revolution was the ultimate goal, supposedly, and all those communist haters,
many of them,
yeah, they all jumped on this idea, and of course in the process this this bug got out of the box and may have done a lot more damage than people have any idea about.
And she'll be here. She's already an accomplished author. She wrote her memoirs, Me and Lee, How I Came to Know, Love, and Lose Lee Harvey Oswald. But her new book is David Ferry, Mafia Pilot, Participant in an Anti-Castro Bioweapon Plot, Friend of Lee Harvey Oswald, and Key to the JFK Assassination. And there's a lot of subtitles in the books these days. But, we need to do a little phone manipulation to get her on the line.
I can talk about some of the other things that have come up on the mini headlines, because this is our headline for the day, I suppose. And we're probably...
Well, go ahead, but I think we're right up against the wall on this.
Okay.
What's on your mind?
Well, there's some minor stuff out there. The Vatican is talking about reforming the church from within and trying to coax his bishops into acting fairly and humanely toward the common folk out there. He's called for a synod, which is an effort to bring the church together through its leadership. Setting the tone for a two-week meeting of Roman Catholic bishops that is expected to take up issues like divorce, which could lead to a revision of some of the church's positions. If you're divorced now, you're kind of out until you can't receive the sacraments. All kinds of little things that they block you on to purge you from the church. Pope Francis urged participants to speak openly. Those people who have had situations in their life, and there was a couple in their 70s or 80s who went before these bishops and told how sexually they were involved with one another.
Your microphone is drooping.
It's wanting to go down.
I've got something to play us into, sure, Judith Berry Baker here, just to recreate the times of the day for those who can remember and those who weren't even alive then. You listen to The Morning Edge, coming back with Judith Berry Baker.
There we go.
As the World Turns.
For viewers of the CBS soap opera, As the World Turns, first word came at about 1:40 p.m. Eastern Time. It happened too quickly for cameras to be in place.
And I gave it a great deal of thought, Grandpa.
Here is a bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
Then it was back to the soap opera, but not for long. Soon after, Walter Cronkite was back, reporting from the CBS newsroom, complete with rotary telephones and wire machines.
This picture has just been transmitted by wire. It is a picture taken just a moment or two before the incident. If you can zoom in with that camera, we can get a closer look at this picture.
And almost exactly 1 hour after his initial bulletin, this now famous announcement.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
Yeah, that was Walter Cronkite, as well as a little overview of some of the coverage leading and following the announcement of the death of John Kennedy and the assassination. And the story as it was at the time. And to help us sort through that, in a homecoming of sense, the hometown girl here, Judith Vary Baker, at least as far as a graduate of Manatee High School in Bradenton, is an American artist, writer, poet, and social scientist. She specializes in linguistics. She is also a South Bend, Indiana lady. She was a young prodigy in cancer research and recently has become a well-published author, and her books are Lee, Me and Lee, How I Came to Know, Love, and Lose Lee Harvey Oswald, and now she's here to talk with us about her new book, David Ferry, Mafia Pilot, Participant in Anti-Castro Bioweapon Plot, Friend of Lee Harvey Oswald, and Key to JFK Assassination. And Ms. Baker, we have been warming our audience up to you, and thank you so much for joining us on The Morning Edge.
Good morning,
well,
Ms. Baker.
Well, I'm pleased to be here, even though it's 6 a.m.
Ah.
Well, you were just
Yeah, we're over on the Pacific Coast here. We've had an incredible response, really. It's been a wonderful tour so far. And, of course, I'd like to put in a quick plug that on November 22, 23, and 24, I'm hosting the JFK Assassination Conference in Dallas.
Are
so if
really?
People go to my Facebook, they'll see that. That's Judith Baker, J-U-D-Y-T-H, Baker, on Facebook, and get all the information there.
So, Judith, you are on that conference. Is there any interest in your story going into another movie script such as Oliver Stone's JFK?
We're not supposed to talk about it.
Oh, you mean there is a
comment? So that's a no comment. You know what that means.
I do. That's encouraging. So, okay. All right. Well, then you have particular information, and Henry's got the better insights than I do. I know that you worked under Mary Sherman and the awful circumstances surrounding her and her life.
Since you are speaking for I imagine the first time on the radio directly in your own hometown. Well, I understand you came from South Bend, but your high school hometown of Bradenton, Florida. You probably even maybe listened to 1490 AM Signal, or your parents did. Back there in the early 60s, it was one of the first stations here in Bradenton. Tell us just who Judith Vary was back as a high school girl here in Bradenton.
Well, according to my critics, by the way, I don't have so many more critics anymore. There's just one that keeps popping up. But according to my critics, my schoolmates thought I was either weird or very intelligent. Of course, that's all they were asked. Do you think she was either weird or was she intelligent?
Those aren't mutually exclusive.
The fact of the matter is I had a lot of fun at Manatee High. I had a lot of friends. I'm in the face in the annuals. You can see I was in many clubs and so on. I had a lot of boyfriends. I had a wonderful time at Manatee. I've always praised Manatee High School for the fact that we had the science research seminar run by Colonel Doyle, and had all those connections to military, right. Oak Ridge, all kinds of things that helped me pursue my cancer research. But I even missed my own prom because I had to take care of the animals and work on, So sometimes it was really tough, but I always had wonderful friends, and to this day I'm in contact with a number of them.
Well, Ms. Baker, you're actually talking, at least to myself, as a Manatee High alumni, and I wasn't that many years behind you, through the 70s anyway.
But and I'm wondering. Incredible school. I mean, it was an absolutely incredible school. You know, the drill team, you name it, the football team. I mean, we had so much fun, didn't we?
Well, yeah, I did. In the 70s, I was having a different kind of fun, and we were known for some other accomplishments here other than research. Well, we were doing our own research, actually. But what I want to ask you, because they've revamped all the labs now, how was the high school lab that I remember in the 70s, which couldn't have been much different than what you had in the early 60s, suitable for the kind of cancer research you were doing? And explain to the audience what you actually were able to do as a high school student in a high school lab.
All right. First of all, I started with 100 mice, and some of them died, by the way, because of the way they were packed. It was really gross. But one of them was a male. That helped a great deal to continue my collection of mice. And then I was able to get germ-free mice from a laboratory in Tampa. And everybody was helping to get these connections. At first, I was doing keeping everything in a lab. It wasn't in the lab itself that the students used. It was in the supply room behind those labs where we had all kinds of equipment, all kinds of chemicals and so on. People didn't see that.
So was that undercover or was this accepted?
Well, here's the thing. Actually, the people got scared and they installed ultraviolet lamps in that. And finally, when the mice started getting cancer, big lumps and everything, I was moved under the stadium. They were afraid. So it was actually everything was moved under the stadium.
Wow.
And they piped in the water I needed and had ventilation fans going and all kinds of
Wait a minute, they made special plumbing just for you?
Well, no, they had plumbing there already because of the football players and everything, so it wasn't that much harder to add in distilled water, see.
And I know we want to get into the other stuff, but I'm still just fascinated by maybe personal curiosity. How did you first approach somebody at Manatee High and say, hey, I'd like to do some cancer research?
Well, what happened is that I invented a new method for getting magnesium out of seawater that actually Dow Chemical Company offered me $2,500 or they'll just steal it. So, you know, of course, I let them have it. And it was a modified way, on the German process that was used at the time. So that got me to the International Science Fair, where I met a lot of scientists and all that, and I had brought along my information, the work that I'd been doing in cancer, and they were extremely interested in this and contacted my school, and that was part of what helped me get started there.
So you had...
I had already been working for almost 2 years in cancer research because my grandma had died, and I had cancerous fish, and I was already in contact with Georgiana Watkins, who was the head of the American Cancer Society in that region.
The cancer issue, I know some people who have been involved in the medical system, and there is a theory running around that cancer is not something that just happens to you because of your lifestyle, that actually it's a contagion that you can get by being around people and or animals.
Yeah, this was suppressed for a long time. I mean... many cancers are caused by viruses, and that some of them are latent in your system. I'll give you I'm going to simplify this for the listener. Imagine, think of cancer as a sleeping virus in your system. And by the way, almost everybody has it because of the contaminated poliovirus vaccines that we received, either with injections or by sugar cube. They didn't get the last of the contamination out that causes cancer until 1999, and they do not like you to know that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the problems we have, is that most people are carrying a virus that causes what they call polyoma. Polyoma meaning many different kinds of cancer. And that was isolated with SV40 monkey virus.
Judith, the individual that I know personally indicated to me that she would warn people not to be so attentive even to a relative if they had cancer because of that.
All right, I'd like to explain things. People can help people with leprosy, for example, and not get it, but you should take precautions. Honestly, I would not drink or eat after someone. I would make sure that you use really hot water in a dishwasher. I would not eat or drink after someone. You should not exchange bodily fluids with someone like that. All right, so these are the kind of things that you normally should do for anybody if they had measles, for heaven's sakes. No, it's I wouldn't call it particularly contagious. I would say that it's foolish to expose yourself over and over and over again, though, to it, because eventually you could get the virus transferred to you.
Ms. Baker, let me just I have a recent, very pertinent comment to that, but I do want to remind our audience that we're speaking with Judith Very Baker, and her latest book is David Ferry, Mafia Pilot, Participant in Anti-Castro Bioweapon Plot, Friend Lee Harvey Oswald, Key to the JFK Assassination. We'll be linking to her blog, judithbaker.blogspot.com, and Judith is spelled with a Y, J-U-D-Y, thbaker.blogspot.com. You'll be able to find out more about the book there and about the upcoming conference. But, you know, coincidentally, or maybe not so coincidentally, my dog that I had for 12 years just passed away a week and a half ago from malignant melanoma, and it first became noticeable about 5 weeks before her passing, about the size of the tip of my thumb, and then in 5 weeks it grew to a size of a child's fist.
Yeah, any time. Yeah, and remember, I have continued to accumulate information and understanding about cancer,
right,
because I wanted to cure cancer. I was kicked out of it. You can read about it in the book Me and Lee how that happened, but I really feel sorry for you. Melanoma is one of my specialties. I mean, I can talk to you a minute about that.
Well, let me throw one more comment out there, because it's about what you just said, because I have another dog who's about a year older, and as the sick dog got sicker, I was trying to give it better and better food to keep her wanting to eat, you know, from dry food to wet food to hamburger, et cetera. And no matter how attractive the food was in her bowl to the other dog, he did not want to eat out of her bowl.
That's right. She could smell it.
He could smell it. When you say he could smell it, what do you mean by that?
A dog can smell melanoma. It smells apparently something like rotten potatoes.
Oh, really?
Oh.
But a human can't smell that.
No, we don't have the nose that a dog has. And so I'm saying, see, that bowl wasn't cleaned out decently. It's not your fault. You'd have to put it in an autoclave, probably get all the viruses and smell out of it.
Wow.
You could smell it.
Well, what's wrong with you, Henry?
Well, I mean, this was immediately after the dog had eaten her fill, and there
now,
was still
the
fresh
thing.
Hamburger.
Here's the reason that these many dogs and cats and so on are getting leukemia, they're getting cancers, because carcasses unfit for human consumption because they're filled with cancers are chopped up and made into dog food, and the processing doesn't kill the virus.
So that is one of the elements of why people become vegetarians.
Well, you have to. Meat is not going to hurt you, but I hardly can bear to eat meat in the United States because of the way the animals are treated. Having lived overseas, and in Sweden, for example, they're not even allowed to cut a dog's tail off.
I'm rushing a little bit because I know
humanity is so much more pronounced in treating animals in Scandinavia.
Okay. I know Augie has a lot of questions about your latest book, David Ferry, but let me just ask you one more question about melanoma then. Because what I was told is that with dogs, the dogs with dark pigment on their gums are more susceptible to melanoma, and I thought it was the reverse in humans, that people that have more pigmentation are more resistant to melanoma.
Well, all right. Well, you know, setting dogs aside, because we don't have an awful lot of time here, what I'd like to tell you about melanoma is that it is a very fast-growing problem and also a very fast-growing cancer. And I, myself, one of the ways you can avoid melanoma, of course, is by not getting exposed to sunlight. Basically, follow this rule. If you have a dark mole or something that looks like a mole, and the edges are wiggly and they're not smooth and round, but the edges are wiggly and have different colors, if the edges fade out, and the other thing,
I'm looking at Augie right now.
Two different colors in the mole, like brown and dark brown, or brown and black, two different colors, get it off.
Mm-hmm.
Get it removed immediately.
I lost a good friend who always wore a shirt when he played tennis with me and always lost to me. But he ended up with a melanoma on his stomach, but it was always covered with a cloth. So I wondered about that. He did wait too long, and he died at a fourth stage circumstance that went to his brain, and he luckily died in his sleep. But being in the sun or in playing tennis, but always wearing a shirt. I went shirtless, and I didn't suffer the same problems that he did, of course.
Well, melanoma can appear anywhere on your body, not just necessarily from, you know, being exposed to sun. You also can be exposed to ultraviolet light and get it too much. But yet, ultraviolet light is one of the ways, if you use a fluorescent bulb long, that's with a quartz fluorescent lamp, that will actually kill almost any virus that's in your house, including Ebola.
Really?
So I would ask people to get a full spectrum ultraviolet lamp in court.
Well, we're into Ebola now, aren't we?
Well, okay. Tell us your thoughts about the media coverage and what misinformation good information there is.
Should people be
you're getting you know, keeping the American people afraid seems to be the hobby of the U.S. government, so that, you know, nobody wants to change their government if they're under stress or siege.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, by keeping us afraid of everything, we don't demand change like we should. Things have really deteriorated in our country. Where I live overseas, because I had to, because of, I had threats against my life. I was hospitalized 5 times after speaking out in just 4 years. Even though I was on the History Channel and everything else, it's no immunity guarantee, you know. So overseas, I mean, I live in countries where there's free college education.
Oh, you live in Europe.
5 to 6 weeks mandated paid vacation for everybody. Almost equal paid, so a waitress doesn't have to get tips. So she gets the same pay that an office worker or secretary would get. And free medical care. Now, they talk about high taxes. I want to tell you, by the time you end up paying all those hospital bills and all your health insurance, and then you still might lose your home, nothing like that happens in Scandinavia.
Well, you're in Scandinavia. You're not in France. But that's a similar thing in France. Not quite.
Well, yes. A lot of the EU is that way, even Germany. Mm-hmm. But over in America, it seems that everything, it has a price tag, including your health, your strength, your home, and your any treatment. If you have cancer. And this is my primary piece of anger that I have, is that we have cancer treatment palaces out there, that and big fountains and beautiful surroundings and huge bills to cure your cancer. Of course, they really don't cure it. Most of the time, it's the cut, burn, and poison method. That is, they do surgery, they do radiation, that's burning you, all right, and poisoning you with chemo. Mm-hmm. And we have so many ways to cure cancer, but it isn't profitable, so they're not doing it.
Well, on Ebola, can you, just quickly, because we want to move on, but what about the story we're getting from the media now? Is it as communicable or non-communicable as they're saying?
Oh, it's absolutely communicable. Today in Spain, they were talking about a worker who had 2 layers of her specialized clothing and everything, and she ended up getting it, too. It's quite contagious, and the most idiotic thing I think our government has done in a long time is to send thousands of troops over there, all right, to build infrastructure to fight Ebola. What is it? Do we have to use troops to fight everything, even a disease that can be fought on?
I think it's 40,000, too.
We have Africans over there. Poor African people who could be, if we want to go and throw money in that, we could have African natives who are there putting up those infrastructures. No, they're sending over our troops. I promise you some will get Ebola, and you will not like, go look at the pictures. You're going to see huge lumps, huge blood-filled blisters all over their bodies, rotting parts of their legs and arms.
A miserable death.
It's disgusting, it's very contagious, and it's ridiculous that we would actually send our troops there. But let me tell you who we have to blame, as I see it. We have Big Pharma, and they can cut my head off if they want, all right? But Big Pharma here, we have the Bill Gates Foundation, we have Monsanto, and others that are, you know, they're going to be selling the virus to protection, you know, as a vaccine to all these desperate Americans after, if this hits in America. They've already brought back people. And we, you know, we already have people with Ebola that are actually in hospitals in the United States when they should have been kept overseas and not allowed to return if they were exposed to it. We should have quarantined it. Instead, it seems every opportunity we have, go ahead and put them in another hospital and see if we can work with it, and the virus escapes very easily.
Isn't that what Cuba does with the cancer and the AIDS people? They quarantine them into an area?
They absolutely do, and despite the terrible problem we still have with blockading Cuba and not allowing them to have the medical supplies and everything, Cuba has actually supplied doctors to, like, Haiti and other places free of charge. They have more doctors per capita, I think, than any other country. And Castro got really interested in curing cancer because, remember, I was in a project, a biological weapon development project, to kill Castro with cancer. Mm-hmm. With cancer.
And that is
and
all.
So he's really been interested in trying to cure it.
And that's talked about in your latest book, David Ferry. You are also the author of Me and Lee, How I Came to Know, Love, and Lose Lee Harvey Oswald. It's Judith Very Baker that we're talking with. Her website is judithbaker.blogspot.com. And I know you'll probably groan a little bit as you listen to this, but just to get a segue into your book, let's play this clip from Oliver Stone's JFK movie, where Joe Pesci is playing David Ferry, and you'll be able to comment and tell us just how close they got or how far they were from the real David.
Well, I'd love to do that. Thank you.
Good. I'm mad at it. Come up, Dave. We were told that you took a trip to Texas shortly after the assassination on Friday.
Yeah, now that's true. I drove to Houston.
What was so appealing about Houston?
I hadn't been there ice skating in many years, and I was with a couple of young friends, and we decided we wanted to go ice skating.
Dave, may I ask why the urge to go ice skating in Texas happened to strike you during one of the most violent thunderstorms in recent memory?
Spur of the moment thing. Storm wasn't that bad.
I see. Where did you drive?
We went to Houston, and Saturday night drove to Galveston, stayed over there.
And then Sunday?
In the morning, we went goose hunting.
You bagging the geese on this trip?
I believe the boys got a couple.
But the boys told us they didn't get any.
Come to think of it, they're right. We got out there where the geese were, and there were thousands of them all over the place. But you couldn't approach them. But why is a bunch of birds?
Your young friends also told us you had no weapons in the car, Dave. Isn't it a bit difficult to hunt for geese without a shotgun?
Yes, I remember now. I'm sorry, Mr. Garrison, I got confused. We got out near the geese, and only then did we realize we had forgotten our shotguns. Stupid, right?
All right, well, that's one of the few clips I can play of Joe Pesci talking on the radio as David Ferry. You know, that doesn't paint him as a very sharp person, but you probably differ, don't you, Miss Baker?
Oh, absolutely. Besides which, I mean, Dave was a very intelligent man. He's not going to act intelligent in front of Jim Garrison's men. Actually, Garrison never personally interviewed Dave. It was Lou Ivins and others who did, who were on his investigative team. And what you don't see there, although what you didn't play, which you could have, is when you see David Ferry phoning them and saying, they're going to kill me. I'm going to die. Don't you understand what you've done? Because
isn't there a scene?
Although David Ferry was able in 1963, after extensive questioning by the FBI, which you see the beginning there, by 1967, when Garrison started his investigation, the only investigation we've had into the Kennedy assassination that was through a court system, people were being killed right and left, and many had been killed by then. David Ferry sees his name in the paper, and Dave knows that he is going to be a dead man. He tells them he's going to die, and 5 days later, he's dead, and of course, they said it was by natural causes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you believe that, I have bridges for sale for you and other items.
Well, there is a scene in there where he talks about being threatened, that his life's in peril, and Clay,
absolutely.
And Clay Shaw seems to be a factor in all of that.
And definitely was. You will get the full story about who Clay Shaw really was and what he was up to and who David Ferry really was. David Ferry has been hidden. He is a key factor in the Kennedy assassination. I knew him personally. He was filled with all kinds of problems. But we're talking about a man who was a pilot who was so excellent that he was training people who were going to be flying in and out of Cuba, anti-Castro sorties. He had two Bush planes. One was a Stinson Voyager, and he said he could land that Voyager on the back of a turtle. And then he had a Taylor Craft L2 that you never hear about. You only hear about the other plane, but the L2, he said he could land that on the back of a flea. And so he could get in and out of places, like in Cuba. There's no doubt that he was actively involved in training anti-Castro insurgents. There's no doubt that he and Lee Oswald were friends. I am a living witness, and I've had to pay the price for that because I personally knew both men, and they were working together trying to kill Castro. Lee Oswald was sent to New Orleans. One of the things he did is pretend to be pro-Castro, and he was working with Guy Bannister at the time. Guy Bannister was a former FBI chief of over 500 agents in Chicago. Now, we're supposed to believe that Lee Oswald had an office in the same building as Bannister, but Bannister somehow has lost all his brains and doesn't even know about it. So, I mean, there's a lot of cover-up going on and everything.
So
I feel privileged to have met these people and that I got to know them.
So when Ruby shot him and he yelled, I'm, what did he say at that time? There was
And you were watching that live, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yes.
And you had,
oh, my God. You know, I did, you shocked me because I was on another plane and then you bring that up. All I can say is, what if you had seen your mother or your father or your lover killed before your eyes, and then somebody brings it up out of the blue?
I apologize for that.
I wasn't ready for it.
No, I'm sorry. Well, the reason I brought it up is because he expressed that he was a stooge, or
Patsy.
He said something else. He said some other.
I said I'm a patsy, and that was a mafia term. Lee was in a particular and very special position in that his family was mafia. His mother had dated the godfather's own driver, and his aunt was married, Lillian Moret, was married to Charles Dutz Moret, and he was an enforcer at one time. He was a boxer and for Marcello, and then when he got older, Marcello gave him a cushy position, you know, as a numbers runner and all that, and bookie, and he was close to Marcello, and Carlos Marcello, of course, was the most powerful godfather throughout the entire West and South,
Louisiana.
Western. Yes.
Yeah, you know, you just...
All the way over to Dallas.
When you got involved with all of this, and was a Dr. Oshner from the NIH...
Yeah, Dr. Oshner. Dr. Oshner has Oshner Clinic. He had the wonderful Dr. Mary Sherman. I had been actually ordered to make cancer more deadly. In the for 2 years, I'd been working on materials, not only... Well, I was at the University of Florida at the time when I got the call, come to New Orleans. We have work for you to do there, and we will get you into medical school 2 years early. We'll pay all your expenses in medical school. You're going to be working with Dr. Mary Sherman, who's one of the most famous cancer researchers in the world, and also a great surgeon. And, of course, Dr. Oshner had been mentoring me for over 2.5 years by then. So, I wanted to come. He was a very famous doctor who had many connections. Everybody knew he was very anti-communist. I was at University of Florida. I was very much anti-Castro at the time. And he asked me, are you anti-Castro? And I said, well, sure I am. He said, you know, you're just the kind of person we need. Little did I know that I would be ending up on the wrong side of the what I was invited into by accident, as you can read. In me and Lee. I kept the things. I kept all kinds of check stubs and material because I realized I was in something that was historic. If we killed Fidel Castro and it looked by natural means, by cancer, nobody could be blamed for it. We could avoid... you can't just go and shoot Castro and not have repercussions at that time with Russia. We could have had World War III. So I felt like I was really serving my country. I felt like it was quite dangerous, and yes, it was. Everybody that was associated with, almost all of them, were murdered.
And so but at some point you realized that you were being associated with mobsters, criminals, Marcello and so forth.
Yes, but you see, at that time the CIA was working very closely with the mafia to kill Castro.
Mm-hmm.
And Lee Oswald was right in between. Lee Oswald was working, he was from the ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence, and he was posing as pro-Castro, but he was borrowed by the CIA to work in various aspects, such as he penetrated Russia, the USSR, and brought back a lot of information. People don't know all the things that Lee did.
But so in that connection, when you, you saw this use of these characters and the legitimacy of what your effort was about in killing Castro by seeming natural means.
That's right.
Then you felt, well, you have to do what you have to do. Was that your attitude, or at some point you had?
Well, the way they gave me an option out, but when I saw the kind of cancer that they were working with, I was very intrigued. It was the fastest growing cancer I'd ever seen anywhere at any time. This is a dangerous biological weapon. And one of my ideas, which I haven't really expressed very much in the book, is I was concerned about, even if I wasn't in the project, what were they going to do with this? And there, who would be responsible for keeping this under control? Lee Oswald was actually asked by the CIA to watch over the project to make sure it did not get into the wrong hands. So there are many, many things that are not known to the public about Lee Oswald. He knew so much that they had to actually murder him, yes, right on live TV, the first live TV murder in history. That was
there was a CIA
70 Dallas police were watching.
Mm-hmm.
Such a setup.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him, go down. And I screamed, and honestly, for 2 days, I can't remember what happened after that.
So you saw someone you loved killed on television in front of you, so to speak, and you knew where that had come from, so that it had to culminate in your mind somehow that you had been party to his death, perhaps.
People have mentioned that before, but the fact of the matter is that nothing could have stopped Lee from trying to save the president.
Mm-hmm.
When I first spoke out in 1999, and I received a lot of flack, it doesn't happen much anymore because I've got so much evidence and more witnesses have come out that have verified. I have living witnesses who verified my relationship with Lee, for example, and they're on film and everything. But here's the thing. Back then, I was so naive. I mean, after all, I was, I thought, I believed the authorities. I believed what they were doing. I believed that I was trying to help my country. I believed in the goodness of our CIA and all that they were trying to defend our country and so on. There's so much that I did not understand, but Lee did. And Lee was able to penetrate the assassination rings and... You know, he loved Kennedy. When I spoke out in 1999 and said that Lee Oswald was trying to save Kennedy's life, people said, oh, come on, now, maybe he's a patsy and maybe he was framed. Maybe, yes, he was framed. But he didn't go and save anybody's life. Well, I want to tell you.
Now, there's been testimony that he was having a Coke four stories down from where the gun was found with the
line. Oh, absolutely. I mean, Lee knew that he needed to get witnesses that he was not on the sixth floor. Besides which, we have Victoria Adams now. Victoria Adams, before she died, she is also in the Warren Commission report, and they told her, you're lying. You know, anytime you have a witness who might have exonerated Lee Oswald, they say they're lying or they're simply wrong. And and it's all there in the Warren Commission anyway,
well,
in
you
those
had,
26 volumes, but there are too many pages for people to read.
Victoria
Adams was on the stairs, and she saw nobody coming down or heard nobody either. Those noisy wooden stairs. She's our witness that he never was on the up because he
the
was on,
level,
coming
yeah.
down from the
so
fifth
you're
floor.
Saying those guns were a plant and...
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And we have so much evidence. I hope people will come to the assassination conference in Dallas.
Is that going to be...
The AFK assassination
is there
conference.
Any chance
they can hear.
Is there any chance that will be a C-SPAN event? Because that would be a real way to get it out there.
Well, trying to get the mass media involved in this. I mean, I've been approached several times saying, all you have to do is say Oswald killed Kennedy, and you'll be a rich woman, and we'll put this all over TV because there's no doubt that you knew him.
Well,
you were lovers.
One of the enemies of JFK was on the Warren Commission, and that was Alan Dulles.
That's right. You know your stuff. Good for you.
And Alan Dulles has been responsible for many assassinations, some of which people are unaware of, but And he is the chief reason we have the problem with Iran today, and we're having to recover from back in 1953 in the set-aside of Mossadegh.
Absolutely.
But,
well, we'd love to have you back on the show before that conference.
Yeah, that would be terrific, actually. We would love to do that.
Yeah, if you'd like to be part of this the conference we're having, you know, and...
What do we have to do? What do we have to do?
Just show up or connect?
Connect.
All right, we'll work on that off the air.
I think we will, yes.
Okay, that would be terrific.
No,
because by the way, these conferences over the year, there is no doubt that Lee Oswald was framed. There's no doubt about who were the real enemies of Kennedy. But just to show you, when I was trying to explain to people that Lee had actually tried to save Kennedy's life, and Lee told me, I believe I did save his life.
How did that
had been a couple weeks earlier.
What was that?
Abraham Bolden, Secret Service agent, who was jailed for trying to speak up about the Secret Service and how they let Kennedy down. He was jailed for that. He was framed and jailed. He's a wonderful man who everybody respects and loves. He's been out of jail, thank God, and we're trying to get a pardon, you know, for him. But the fact of the matter is that he was present when the FBI contacted the Secret Service, and Abraham Bolden was there in Chicago with the Secret Service. He was the first black Secret Service person ever, and Kennedy himself picked him out to guard him for a while. So he had very much interest in Kennedy. He hears the FBI is calling his boss. He's sitting right there. When the FBI says, look, we have just uncovered a plot in Chicago, and we've arrested men, and we've stopped Kennedy from coming to Chicago to save his life. And the person who gave us this information, his name was Lee. And, of course, that was Lee Oswald.
Is Oliver Stone going to be at your conference?
Well, I don't know. He was at a conference in Washington. I spoke at a conference in Washington. And hope to get a chance to meet him. I didn't, but Oliver Stone he has my book, and we are, as I said, we've got things going on, and I can't talk about whether he's involved or not.
Mm-hmm.
So
he was pretty well hammered after Nixon and all of that, and then his.
Well, I thought he was a very brave man to put out the film JFK. There is a bad website out there by people who also attack me.
Mm-hmm.
Telling you the JFK 100 or something, 100 reasons why you shouldn't believe that the film JFK is worth watching. I'm going to tell you, that film was never meant to be a documentary. It was meant to get people understand some of the circumstances of the death of JFK, how it happened, and it created a tremendous outcry, and we got what was called the Assassination Records Review Board out of it. They released over 1 million documents. Not one of them implied at any time that Lee Oswald was actually involved in killing Kennedy, and quite the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
We even have more information than ever that he was on our side and trying to, you know, do what he could to kill Castro and so on.
Let me just quickly give the websites before we run out of time. We've been speaking with Judith Ferry Baker. Her latest book is David Ferry. You can also find out about one of her other books, Me and Lee, How I Came to Know, Love, and Lose Lee Harvey Oswald, at judithbaker.blogspot.com. That's judythbaker.blogspot.com. We'll be linking to that on our podcast site, as well as the actual book website, which is dave-ferry.com. And Ferry is spelled ferrie.com.
Well,
and what would you like to leave our audience with before we have to say goodbye?
Parting things. The one thing before you do, your motivation.
Well, David, I haven't quite said enough about David Ferry, about the fact that he knew 5 languages. He was an excellent pilot. That he had at one time said Kennedy ought to be shot, and that was in the presence of 70 retired military officers. They got him involved. Later, he realized it wasn't Kennedy that really caused the problems at the Bay of Pigs like he thought. And he's an Irish Catholic. He had voted for Kennedy, actually. He secretly realized that Kennedy, now he was in groups where Kennedy's death was being discussed and how to kill him, and he had changed his mind, but he kept that to himself.
Mm.
So David Ferry was not a conspirator to kill Kennedy, but he was able to penetrate some of the groups that were involved in New Orleans, and that moved over to Dallas. Because Lee Oswald was in Dallas, he definitely was trying to stop the assassination. This is one reason they had to shoot him right away.
So the vindication of Lee Harvey Oswald has been a lifelong quest for you.
No, I didn't speak up for 35 years.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to protect my children, and in fact, some of my children refused to speak to me because of this. One of my children offered me a free house. You know, he had 22 houses or something like that. My children are geniuses, and all of them have been quite successful in various fields. But by speaking out, I lost my position teaching at a university. I lost my health and strength as well because I've been harmed, you know. I've lost much of my vision and so on. But the fact of the matter is that when I saw the film JFK, I realized I had waited so long. I could not believe with all the evidence and everything I knew that there were still questions about Lee's innocence because I had avoided ever even looking at it. So I spoke out. I went to 60 Minutes. For 14 months, they tried to get it aired. They were stopped from above. I mean, three times we were going to film, and they couldn't do it.
Well, so we are out of time.
There's a lot of story behind that.
Yeah, we've run out of time, Judith, but we need to do this and add to what we've done, and if we can become part of your conference, I think we're going to.
That would be magnificent of you, and it would link to, I love my school. I love the my friends I had there, and it would be just a pleasure that if Braden could be, you know, linked into this, Sarasota, all that area, so that they could enjoy finding out the truth for themselves.
Judith Ferry Baker, again, we'll link to the Blogspot website and as well as the book, dave-ferry.com. Thank you so much for joining us on The Morning Edge today.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Well, we just have a minute here. Breaking news. While we were doing the show, Manatee County Commission candidate Terry Wonder, if you listen to Monday's show, with the whole Mean Girls
episode
at the Tiger Bay Club debate with Carol Whitmore. She will be here in studio on Friday from the opening of the show. So
live and wonderful.
With her lasso of truth, as she likes to call it. And so
there you go.
And, this will be up on the podcast site in minutes, so you can share this one with your friends. People don't really know that Augie digs deep to make this show happen. Week after week after week. It's not an easy, I don't have the time anymore like I did in the years past to research and get out sponsors. So Augie has to bring these shows to you on his own. And there ought to be a way that, we can talk about, you know, in next week about how people can support something like this. Cause really, Augie, I think, you gotta have a lot of, props and kudos about this. I think this is one of the best interviews ever done on this station.
Really?
Well, yeah. I think it both in the import of the content. I mean, look at what we talked about with the cancer things, information, legitimate information, not rumor mongering or things like that was useful for people, about Ebola, about the JFK. And you couldn't do it if you had to break this up every 10 minutes to have the latest testosterone ad or whatever.
Exactly. Well, but before Henry lavishes me anymore, I'm going to lavish him with all the technical help he creates. And when he says, I dig deep, I do, but so does he. So this is a mutual effort, and he has been terrific.
Oh, give me a hug. No, it's okay. All right, well, we'll be back on Friday with Terry Wonder and maybe another, maybe we will reach new heights with that show. You're listening to The Morning Edge.